Bar.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That with Jeff and Gretchen, show number 66.
Woo!
That's Route 66. Get your kicks on show 66. How was that? Fun? Hey, our phone call, phone number that is 206-333-1003. If you want to record, we want to go ahead and call that number and leave a comment. We'll play it on the line, on the show, rather, if it's dignified and
clean,
worthy of our intelligence, our audience's intelligence, and all that kind of stuff. It feels quiet in here. There's no lawnmower. If you would have come over a half an hour before, there was a bunch of screaming kids next door.
Ooh.
But no screaming kids. There must be eating dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they'll be out later. So we have that to look forward to. And a lot has been going on.
Yeah.
So you were telling me a little bit before you had your LASIK.
I had LASIK, and I would highly recommend it. I know just when I was about to have it, everybody was in front of Congress complaining about it so they could actually see what the complaints were because they didn't have any industry statistics.
Right.
Apparently, like 95% of the 12 million people who have had it are satisfied, which is a really high percentage
yes.
in my mind.
Yes,
right?
It is a high percentage.
But the people that have problems really have problems, and I do feel bad for them. But, I mean, the problems are like severe dry eye and then blurry double vision when you're driving at night.
Yeah.
So
why do you have such thick glasses on right now? Does your surgery was your surgery unsuccessful?
No, my surgery was very successful.
I'm kidding.
No, it was good. I am wearing reading glasses just for the end of the second week because they overcorrected my nearsightedness, so now I'm farsighted for a little bit. But
okay,
it's been really good. I gotta say, it's amazing to actually like open your eyes and be able to see. Like wow, because I've worn glasses since I was 12, so
right.
This is awesome.
That's great.
So I do recommend it, but I wouldn't go with the cheapest fly by night place or anybody that advertises like $300 per eye. And you know, a lot of people aren't candidates for it. So if you get somebody who's, you know, you sound like you're on your fence and they're not sure, maybe I wouldn't do it then. But you know.
So do you think, I mean, I know you went to a very reputable person, but do you get the you did a lot of research up front. Did
mm-hmm.
you get the research, get the impression that there were people out there kind of hawking their services no matter if you were sort of a good candidate or not?
Yeah, I think that's probably who wants to turn away business, right? If
right.
somebody's got the money, but they really aren't ideal for
right.
it. So maybe these are the people that are having the problems.
Right.
I don't know, but I didn't have any, and I really do think that it's been great for me. So glad I did it.
Well, how about that?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So what have you been up to?
Well, I got my PMP certification. So
and tell everybody what a PMP is, just so we're...
It's a pimp.
It's a pimp.
It's a professional, project management professional. That's what it is. I had to think about that for a second. So I took a test.
I forgot what he is.
I studied for months and I took a test and I passed.
All right.
So now I can have a little PMP at the end of my name. And, you know, it looks good on resumes and stuff. And since I'm in consulting, we send out resumes of project managers all the time.
Uh-huh.
So that's why the company kind of sponsored me doing it, because obviously it makes me look like more of a project management professional
uh-huh.
or PMP.
And or I got PMP for short.
And I did get a bonus from the company for getting it.
Whoa.
Like $500. Not
wow.
huge, but not bad.
Yeah.
You know, better
all
than
right.
nothing.
There you go. And you got a big certificate to frame.
Woo. I did.
You
I
can press yeah. the girls with that.
I'm taking it on dates with me.
Next to your iPhone, it'll be your most popular resource.
I'll pull out my big certificate. I'll wow them. So
your
and
pimp certificate.
And I also went to Mexico for some scuba diving.
Mm, and how was that?
That was fun. I hadn't been in open water for 13 years. I got a recertification, or I guess it's not a recertification. Once you're certified, you're always certified, which is very interesting.
That is interesting.
So you
even if technology changes and you...
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you're a fool to not get recertified or get go through a refresher class, which is what I did.
Uh-huh.
Because there was some new technology. We used dive computers. We're back in my day, we didn't have no fancy schmancy dive computers. We used dive tables, and we liked it. And they also had these cool new goggles that allow you to see more realistic color underwater.
Wow.
So that's kind of cool. But it was kind of weird because two things sort of happen. One is the first dive that I did, I was going to be like an 85-foot dive and a lot of swim throughs. Hmm. So a complex dive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
is that how they always start with the beginners?
Well, I'm not a beginner. I'm like a guy with got 30 log dives, you know? And this was before I went with another group of people that were getting their certification, but I went on dives before they were still checking out dives.
So okay.
This wasn't a checkout dive at all. This is just a regular dive. But as a result, I got down 10 foot, Gretchen, and I said, I can't do this. I didn't feel good. I didn't feel comfortable.
Oh, wow.
I was very surprised. I went back up.
But you were with your partner, right? Or your buddy or whomever?
Well, that's the story I'm going to get to in a little bit.
Oh, okay. We lost our buddy.
So, yeah, I had the worst dive buddy ever.
Oh, you had a bad buddy. Uh-oh.
Oh, my God. This guy doesn't belong in the water.
Uh-oh.
So anyways, I went up, you know, safely. I wasn't comfortable, but I didn't freak out like when I shoot right up to the top. And I was only at 10 foot. And one of the dive guys that worked down there, he came up and he was really terrific. He just said, okay. I said, I think I'm just going to go back to the boat and not do this dive stuff. I didn't like it. Yeah. And he said, okay, that may very well be true, but let's just go down. Let me help you down. Just watch me as we go down. It'll be nice and gentle. And, you know, if we get down there, you don't like it, we'll come back up. And so he calmed me down.
Uh-huh.
We went down, got down to 70 or 80 foot. I was fine.
Oh.
It just felt like normal.
Oh.
It felt like, oh yeah, this is what it feels like again. Uh-huh. And so then, you know, I kind of followed him for a little bit since my buddy was off doing something else. And my dive buddy shot up from 60 foot on two different dives. Just shot right up because he couldn't control his ascent. It's horrible.
Right. Yeah.
And anyway.
Did he get hurt?
No, you know, there's a lot of safety factors built into the computers and built into diving, but boy, he was just an idiot. It's like, ooh, I didn't know how to control my ascent. And he was not a beginner.
Wow.
And then finally we were on a dive where, and you know, I got actually chewed out just a little bit for not watching my buddy and not coming up with him.
Oh.
Now, when a guy shoots up like that, you don't shoot up after him. Because, you know, you don't put yourself in peril.
Right.
But you keep an eye on him.
Yeah.
And you go up slowly.
So
and
you watch if he
right.
floats to the top or sinks right. again. You're supposed to catch him if he sinks.
That's right. So I didn't do that. And anyway, so I kept a better watch on him in next dives. But he never kept an eye on me, Gretchen. And there was this one dive, I remember, it was a pretty simple, stressless dive. We were probably at 40 foot, just zooming around the coral. And everybody was looking at the same things. You know, you kind of look at the same things. You sort of got, ooh, look at the fish, look at the coral here.
Uh-huh.
Kind of stayed close to the coral because that's where the interesting action happens.
Uh-huh.
This guy was over in La La Land going up and down. It's like, I would tap on my tank. Hey, dude. And I would point, like, get over here. What the hell are you doing? And finally, the guy shot up again. Uh-huh. And this time I looked at the dive masters.
Uh-huh.
I did the buddy signal and I shrugged my shoulders, which is sort of like, I don't know where my buddy is. But I did that and I pointed to my buddy and they just gave me an okay.
So like buddy's a retard. We're sorry.
Basically, they're like, no, you don't have to go with him. You're okay. We see him. The boat's right there. Stay down. Have fun.
Bad buddy.
Oh my God. But
how'd you get paired up with him?
Yeah, just sort of luck of the draw. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So that was the worst part of the trip. But I got like, what was it, 5 good dives in.
Oh, good.
And had some great food, great company. Because I went with like 5 people that I knew.
Oh, good.
Among the rest of the group. And the rest of the group was really good, too. But the 5 friends that I had, we ended up, you have to wait 24 hours until you fly out. So we had the afternoon and the morning before our flight. And we just ended up getting a car and driving around the island, just having a ball.
Oh,
so,
well, it sounds fun.
It was a nice vacation.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good, and I'm glad the diving was good.
I'm so glad. Gosh, I don't know what I would have done. I was so sad because when I got down there and I was thinking, okay, there's my dive vacation right there. But now I had some people, some friends that actually didn't dive at all.
Mm.
One had ear problems and one, she couldn't get through her checkout stuff. She was claustrophobic, and which happens.
Yeah.
If you're claustrophobic, sometimes you don't know until you get down there. And she just couldn't do it.
Mm.
So they actually they did some fun things while we were diving. They swam with the dolphins.
Oh, fun.
They swam with the turtles.
Wow.
They drove around the island, and it sounds like they had a lot of fun. So there would have been stuff for me to do, but I thought, my God, I just bought all this equipment, right. You know, and
you were there to
paid
try
for
to do
the
it.
Dives, mm-hmm. and I thought, what's going to happen? So I'm so thankful to this guy. Who was just so gentle, talked me down, and it was great. And he was obviously had been there before,
right?
Done this stuff before, right. So it was really good.
Great, that's very exciting.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the dive guys. They were really good. In fact, on one dive, second day, last dive, it was I think you made a mention. You actually knew this about Cozumel. It's very drifty.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of our dives really kind of sucked because they were so drifty that just like, okay, I have no control of where I'm going.
Right, and
I'm just
got to
follow the drift. I can't stop and slow and see this cool little wildlife is like taking a train, like a bullet train. So on the last dive of the second day, we had a pretty drifty dive the dive before, and we went to a different place. And he actually went in the water on three different stops to kind of check and see what the conditions were like, and finally found a spot after three tries. And normally they definitely don't go out of their way like that.
Wow.
So this is very cool. He found a great spot.
Oh.
Very gentle, nice dive.
Oh.
So pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Sounds like you had a fun vacation.
Yeah, it was nice. Cool. Too short as usual, but
yeah,
you know.
Isn't that true? All vacations.
It always is.
Hey, well, speaking about vacation destinations.
Oh, yeah.
You were in Hawaii not that long ago, right?
Last summer.
Yeah. Well, believe it or not, Hawaii is doing well. You think with everybody, you know, have you seen the surveys out there, people talking about, are you going to take a vacation this year? And most people are saying, what vacation? No. You know, we have to pay our taxes or,
right.
You know, there's just, we have to buy food, we have to buy gas. There's not going to be any vacation. We can't drive anywhere. It's too expensive. It's just really been pretty depressing for the old vacation industry. But believe it or not, Hawaii is actually experiencing a tourism boom.
Really?
That was really interesting. Yeah, they have 1.9 million visitors to the islands in the first quarter, up almost 3% from a year ago.
It's counterintuitive because in times that are more economically challenging, the places that boom a little bit are the Niagara Falls of the world and the New York Cities and Washington, D.C.
Right, things are a little bit closer.
Yeah,
but you know what they did, which was really smart, which is why, remember in the 90s when the Japanese tourism market kind of fell out? Well, they lost a lot of tourists then, because at the time Japan accounted for a third of their visitors.
Right.
This time they got smart and they have diversified all their advertising, and they are actively seeking people from the United Kingdom and Germany and all over the world, in places that had never, you would think, would make Hawaii a destination.
Right.
And because their currencies are so strong, Hawaii actually looks like a bargain.
Wow.
So they're getting a lot of different people from a lot of different markets. Oh, and Canada, too. Canadian visitors are up 8%.
Wow.
So I thought that was really smart of them.
It's a long way to go, but it is very smart of them
that they're actually making everything work. And in the meantime, Waikiki Beach has really undergone a facelift, and Starwood is spending $750 million to renovate three of their hotels on Waikiki.
Really?
Uh-huh. And even though a couple of the local airlines went bankrupt, Aloha and ATA, they're getting some other ones back in to make up the slack. So everything's looking good. And there's more flights that are flying there from different places like the Philippines and Australia. And so Hawaii is actually on a roll. For them, because there's not a whole lot of bright news in the economy right now.
No, there's not.
No. So, hey, you want to think about a destination, maybe put Hawaii on the list.
Huh. Well, that's very interesting to know. Well, closer to home, I got some good news for you.
What?
You know, Dallas is singled out in a recent book that it's the second largest metropolitan area that are the second most imbalanced between single men and single women. We have 46,300 more single men than single women. This is bad news for me.
Wow, that's exciting. 46,000 more single men?
Right.
Wow.
It's the...
It's
not the second. It's the fourth largest male surplus.
Okay.
I don't know. It doesn't say age.
Are they probably all 20?
Oh, I don't know. But they said if you can't find what you're looking for here,
mm-hmm, yes,
with this huge surplus, you can go to LA where the surplus is even greater.
Ah, okay.
And for men, we should go to New York City, yep, or Northern New Jersey.
Yeah, I was going to say the Northeast. Remember, really? We talked about that last year. Northeast had the biggest surplus for you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the guy that wrote this book is a man named Richard Florida. And, they asked him, well, so what do you think this is? And he said, it's because men tend to be more opportunity driven. So they tend to be mobile, and women tend to want to stay closer to friends and families. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of stayed closer to the older areas where the men are more apt to come down to sort of move to Dallas and so forth. But he also said it's probably short term, because he said one factor that's going on in society is people are looking at where to live in a holistic kind of way, not just where the best jobs are, but also where the best, if they're in the single market, where the best single markets are,
Right. Or if they like outdoors, where the best.
If they like outdoors,
are.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So his theory is that this will tend to balance out after a while.
Huh.
But it's kind of interesting.
But in the meantime, that's pretty cool. So you moving to New York?
Oh, I got tickets, baby.
I wondered why I had such a hard time dating there. There were no men. Okay, there you go.
Oh, now you got a good rationalization.
Yeah, right.
But also we reported, I think a couple weeks ago or a couple shows ago, that Dallas had like the largest growth area for all metropolitan areas.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I saw an article that actually made a little bit of a correction to that. It said, well, it's, if you look at the total, North Texas did do that exactly. But some of that growth was from natural growth. In other words, births and deaths.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The rest of the growth came from in-migration. In-migration is defined as people moving in.
Right.
But if you just look at in-migration alone, mm-hmm, Dallas is number two.
Oh.
Number one is Atlanta.
Oh.
99,000. Hmm. Dallas-Fort Worth is 93,000. Phoenix, 90,000. And then Houston was number four, with a, kind of a drop-off in numbers down to 56,000.
Wow. Interesting.
So,
But there still are a lot of people moving here.
There's still a lot of people moving here.
Yeah, and our real estate market's actually holding its own.
Yeah.
So, just seen a couple articles on that. Oh. Yeah. So speaking of Texas, guess what? San Antonio just took a number one spot in a recent poll also.
Really?
And Dallas, on the same poll, came in... let's see. Dallas came in with an A-. Wait, they didn't say where. But the poll was the most sexually satisfied place to live in the country.
No kidding?
San Antonio. Yep.
I'm heading down there.
That was in Men's Health magazine, based on sales of condoms, birth rates, and sales of sex toys.
Really?
Isn't that amazing?
You wouldn't really think of San Antonio or anywhere in Texas. You'd think of more of a liberal place like San Francisco or,
Well, San Antonio and Austin both got A-pluses.
Huh.
And Dallas got an A-. Houston got a B+. Arlington got a B+, and Fort Worth got a C+.
So this was like a Texas.
Topping the list was Indianapolis.
So we never have thought that.
And Columbus came in second. New York City. Oops. Speaking of, you got to move there to date.
Yeah.
New York City was way down on the list, number 71 with a D.
Okay, so there's a lot of women there to date, but it's not really a lot of fun.
And Lexington, Kentucky was the very end.
Wow.
So
Indy is the hot spot of sex.
Yeah, there you go. Uh-huh. Most sexually satisfied.
You get the impression that that's so conservative up there in Indiana, but
I guess they're having fun.
I guess
they're having sexually fun. Sexually
satisfied. Well, that's interesting. So Dallas is pretty good then.
Dallas did well.
But it's interesting the disparity between Dallas and Fort Worth.
Yeah.
Fort Worth is just our next door neighbor. It should be the same, you'd think. Same kind of people, basically.
Hmm.
But I guess not.
Guess they don't have toys or condoms.
I guess not. Man. Well, I thought this was funny, Gretchen, and maybe you'll think I'm silly, but maybe our audience will enjoy it, or maybe they'll think I'm silly. So there is this, this meetup group thing that...
Mm-hmm. That you're quite an active participant in.
Not so much lately. I just haven't had time.
Oh, okay.
But I'm still sort of a voyeur, I guess, if you will. I'm on all these email lists, but I just don't do anything anymore.
Why don't you tell everybody what it is, just in case?
It's a social group. If you have one in your city, go to meetup.com. They have them for every city, and it's just a way to meet new people. It's not a dating site, though some people use it for that, but you can find interest groups of all types, from photography to running to clubbing to salsa dancing to
wine tasting.
It's all over the map. So it's especially if you're new to a city, it's an awesome place to sort of meet new people. So this is just weird. This group, which was actually growing pretty big, called After 10. It was kind of a club group. And I think I went to a couple events, but I'm not a real club guy. So, you know. But he decided...
So it was, after 10 meaning 10 after o'clock 10 at o'clock, night, so yeah. All the activities were light.
Right.
Okay.
So this guy, the organizer, who again, was a pretty active group, and I think because of this event, I think this thing is dying. He organized this thing called a costume party. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, hey, let's have a costume party. We'll meet at this pub. Everybody wear costumes. So I looked at it and I thought, well, I ain't going to go to some freaking pub and wear a costume for no reason. What a stupid, stupid idea. All right. So the fallout of that, you know, kids, you can read people's comments afterwards. Gretchen, two people showed up. Two people, not even the organizer. And okay, here's, and they both commented. The first guy commented, no one showed. I was there twice. Once around 8:15 to 8:30, didn't see anyone in costumes. Asked the doorman if he had seen anyone in costume. He said no. I drove around the block for about 20 minutes, asked again, still no. Went back home to check the time and place. Figured it was, since it was the after 10 meetup, that people might not show up until after 10. Went back at about 9:30 in full costume, sat by myself at a table with people staring at me for an hour and a half while I ate dinner. I'm laughing. At 11, decided it was time to go. Finally saw one person in costume as I was leaving, stayed to keep her company. All in all, an awkward evening that I would never repeat. And then the woman writes, and she's in all caps, so she's pretty mad. There were not 785 freaking people at this stinking party. The organizer, this is just an aside, the organizer afterwards put down that 785 people had went to this party. So I think this guy's losing his marbles or something. I saw one other person in a damn costume, and we both left since it sucked, and we all looked ridiculous sitting there in our stupid costumes. This is the worst event I ever attended. You're not a good organizer for an event like this. It was a stupid idea in the first place. So a couple.
However, she went.
So I have a couple of comments on this. First of all, I looked at the event and I thought, there's no way in hell this I am ever going to do something like this. I'll go to a costume party when it's Halloween,
yeah.
When it's, you know, Oscar party or
St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's Day or Mardi Gras, uh-huh. You know. Uh-huh. There's reasons you don't go to a pub and wear a costume. And then these two idiots, sorry, they're kind of idiots, I think, for going in the first place. But then...
I think I'm mad about it when nobody showed.
And I just had to laugh, not at them. I'm just laughing at the whole scenario of two miserable souls in costume at some pub on a Saturday night with everybody looking at them like, what's going on? What the hell? Why are you dressed up like, you know, I don't know what they were dressed up like. So I found it funny.
That is funny.
Needless to say, I think that meetup group has kind of died.
Oh my God, I mean, that's horrible.
I don't think anybody would trust the organizer again.
Oh, jeez, that's bad.
Yeah, I know.
Bad. Oh, let's see, what else? Have you ever looked up anybody that has your same name?
Googled.
Because you have a very unusual
name. As a matter of fact, speaking of that, I just got an email from a fellow in Fredericksburg named Jeff Astrack, and he said, hey, I'm just, you know, I think he was a young kid. I haven't responded to him, uh-huh. When I need to, but he said, hey, I'm Jeff too. All of my family has originated around the Hill Country in Texas. Uh-huh. We all came from Germany there. And I said, I wonder if you're in that same sort of clan.
Huh.
And now I'm not. All of our family ended up in like the Wisconsin area.
All right.
So anyway, but also there's one prominent guy with my name, and he is a sculptor in Minnesota. Very, very good. He travels all around the world teaching.
Wow.
He does clay, uh-huh. And pottery.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen his artwork, and he does it as art,
right.
And sells it for high price. And it's actually nice. I'm not a big into pottery, but I like his work.
Uh-huh.
And so that's kind of cool. He's very well known.
Yeah.
I think he's the first one that you'd get when you Google my name. I'm the second. But then there's another guy who runs a service station, but he's very internet savvy. We've chatted before. He's in Ohio, and just a nice guy. So, so I actually communicated with him. And I've communicated with the sculptor as well.
All right, then I can tell you why you're doing that. I can tell you why you're drawn to that. There's a woman who's written a book called Finding Angela Shelton, and she actually met 40 other Angela Sheltons.
Cool.
And she wrote about it in her book. And there's places called Same Name as Me or Facebook where you can have coalitions of people with your same name. But the fundamental question was, why do we feel a connection with other strangers just because we share a name?
Right.
Which you may have asked yourself. It turns out social science has an answer. It's because human beings are unconsciously drawn to people and things that remind us of ourselves. It's called the name letter effect, maintaining that people like the letters in their own name better than other letters of the alphabet.
Well, these guys with my name, mm-hmm. they're very good looking guys. I'm kidding.
So I thought this was really amazing. Johnsons are more likely to wed Johnsons.
Really?
Women named Virginia are more likely to live in Virginia. And people whose last surname is Lane are most likely to live on a street that has Lane in the name.
Wow, that's weird.
It's what we call implicit egotism, according to a researcher for Gallup. We've shown time and time again that people are attracted to people, places, and things that resemble their names.
Really?
Yes, isn't that wild? Oh, and these names and letters have surprising influence in people's lives. And they did a survey where they put a woman in a jersey that she was wearing, a jersey that had subliminally were paired with their own names, and their name was on their jersey, and they liked her better. So it was really amazing. But
really?
One of the theories is that adults... people's fascination with this might be adult expression of a childhood wish to be an identical twin. So maybe this is how you're trying to find your identical twin that you never had, is to go search for people with your own name.
See, like in my fraternity in college, we had the most popular name turned out to be Jeff. But I didn't feel any particularly affinity to any of the Jeffs. I mean, some were turned out to be good friends.
Right.
But I didn't feel anything special about their name. But like somebody like your name that's somewhat unique, Gretchen,
mm-hmm.
I've come across some, after I've met you, some Gretchens, and I am naturally disposed to kind of like them, to give them the benefit of the doubt. It's true.
So they don't look like small wiener dogs? Gretchen, come here.
What is that from?
Oh, I just would, everybody would come up to me at who I would ever meet and say, oh, I have a dachshund named Gretchen.
You know? Oh, really?
Because it was like, you never heard my name. And then all of a sudden people would start to say, I named my dog Gretchen. So it's like, oh. Oh, good. Wow, isn't that cool? That's so special.
Why? Because they're short and squatty.
Because I never got, you know, a bike license plate that said Gretchen. You know,
oh, like, they never had them?
Yeah, I'm sure you had one.
I did, yeah.
Yeah,
I was lucky.
I never had one, so.
Yeah, I loved mine.
Because you have an affinity for your own letters and your name.
Yes, exactly. Like the pine trees lining the winding road, I've got a name, I've got a name. Like the singing bird and the croaking toad, I've got a name, I've got a name. And I carry it with me like my daddy did, but I'm living the dream that he kept here. Moving me down the highway. Well, you're in the toy business.
I am.
Did you hear about Iran getting rid of all the Barbie dolls? Just happened in the last month. And this is interesting. Iranian police are going through all the stores and getting rid of them. They've been confiscated. And there was only like a vague government proclamation earlier this month denouncing the un-Islamic sensibilities of the idol of girls worldwide, shopkeeper said. And they took them. And what's interesting is Iran is not this crazy, crazy place like sometimes you think. You know, they interviewed a lot of the storekeepers and they're all a little bit spooked about it, because in some case they're just kind of fearful, like, what's the government doing? This is extreme.
Yeah,
right?
It sounds very extreme.
Where in some countries you'd sort of think, well, that's, you know, I understand why they don't have Barbies.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also worried Barbie was a huge seller. And so some shopkeepers just have a very practical standpoint. It's like,
right.
I've got empty shelves.
Right.
I was moving this merchandise, mm-hmm. and I'm not doing it anymore.
Right.
But as a replacement, the government has got a couple new dolls.
I can
imagine. Is called Sarah and one is called Dara. And Sarah is a moon-faced doll clad in Islamic chador or traditional Iranian folk costumes. I mean, that could be nice. But not as sexy as Barbie.
Yeah.
Her twin brother, Dara, notice it's not lover, like Ken.
Her brother.
Her brother, Dara, is also a picture of Iranian propriety. A far cry from Barbie's beefcake boyfriend, Ken.
Is he wearing a military costume? Let me guess.
I don't know.
Yeah, he
I think
a rifle.
He's strapped with bombs. Oh, boom, boom. Hey. Oh, hey. I'm working nightly. But toy shops are still filled with Disney items. They go through a lot of Disney stuff, and, you know, American brands market very, very well, including Gillette, Xerox, Coca-Cola.
Yep.
The Barbies made by Mattel is a bestseller despite the cost, which is about 320,000 reals. In a nation where the average monthly salary is about 800,000 reals. Now, to give you a comparison, an Iranian Barbie knockoff, which this article doesn't say, but I assume they tried to get rid of those too, were about 24,000 reals.
Wow.
And Sarah and Dara go for about 125,000 each.
Wow. Well, actually, the Middle East is a really growing market too, because we've been looking at shows there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a big toy show in Dubai, and we're thinking about going next year.
Dubai doesn't surprise me. It's sort of a whole
central market
for all of the Middle Eastern countries there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in other Barbie news, I have more. It's a big Barbie.
Well, just to add to that, there are American mothers who do find Barbie kind of offensive, because she is the prime example of materialism and beauty that you can never obtain, that she's not a realistic size at all. You know, when you
that explains why I haven't been able to
when
find
you extrapolate
the right
her measurements,
me.
She's actually like a 32 or something. She's totally
and what's
false.
Wrong with that?
She's totally not like any woman found in nature. So she's got a very exaggerated body ideal.
I can't wait till technology develops that artificial woman like that. We'll never go out with real women again. Just kidding. No, we were talking about brats.
Brats,
do you remember that?
Oh, yeah,
a few shows ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a federal judge in California has cleared the path for Mattel to go ahead and have a lawsuit against the ex-employee and Bratz Dolls inventor Carter Bryant.
Wow.
What they're contending, Gretchen, is that this guy actually developed Bratz Dolls while he was working for Mattel.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know all the details of that, and doesn't get into too many details, but it's really interesting. It said sales of Barbie dolls have waned in recent years amid fierce competition from Bratz.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real competitor, which I don't know if I quite realized.
Yeah, and they actually took more shelf space right before I left Toys R Us. They had more shelf space than Barbie did.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Which was amazing considering she was only been around like 4 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mattel said this month that the Bratz litigation was a factor in its $46.6 million first quarter loss.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And now they can't sell them in Iran.
Wow. Yeah, and I had heard that he had developed the idea while he was there, and Mattel shot it down and said they didn't like it, said it wouldn't sell.
Oh.
Yeah, so, but if he was their employee, technically they own the ideas.
I think
which is
when you
works.
Develop and you're the employee, you've signed.
You've signed
things.
That those are your ideas, that your ideas are their ideas, because you're on their payroll. So, yeah.
It is kind of sticky, though, because if they sort of
rejected it. Yeah, then was he free to sell it?
I don't think he's free to sell it.
No, I don't think he's free to sell it either.
But it does seem like...
Because they might have been free to... bring it back at a later time.
Absolutely.
It's still
Mattel's intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that one plays out, but it doesn't sound good for him.
No, it doesn't.
Hmm. Wow. Or good
maybe they'll,
or for MGA.
Maybe they'll strike a deal of some sort.
Yeah, that could be.
Well, speaking of which, if I can have one thing that's related. You talked about Barbie and being on unrealistic expectations.
Yes.
There was a magazine called Self. Have you heard of it?
Self. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I figured
it's a woman's magazine. Yes,
it is. They have found, they did a survey that found 75% of all women have an unhealthy relationship with food. And I'll go into detail here.
So, only the women have an unhealthy relationship with food, even though 75% of Americans are overweight. Somehow does that work exactly?
Yeah, that's kind of true. So the survey was not small. It included 4,000 women. 65% of women ages from 25 to 45 engage in disordered eating, such as skipping meals or cutting out food groups. Okay, now it does say, okay, I know what you're thinking, skipping meals. I mean, we all skip meals every now and then. That's not a big deal. But note that
skipping meals to diet, right?
These are actually cases in which the women say it's associated with emotional or physical distress.
Oh.
In addition, 10% of the women report behaviors consistent with anorexia, bulimia, and binging. 10%
Ooh.
Of all
Man.
Women.
Wow. Oh, that's horrible.
So here's some more statistics. 67% of women, excluding those with actual eating disorders, are trying to lose weight. So about two-thirds of all women at any time are trying to lose weight, which
according is... According to their study. And they've got a younger demographic, I think, too.
Possibly
Probably
so.
Probably not much over 30, I would think.
Yeah. 53% of dieters are already at a healthy weight, and they're still trying to lose weight.
Wow.
That's crazy. That's the society pressures of Barbie mm-hmm. at all. 39% of women say concerns about what they eat or weigh interfere with their happiness.
Wow.
39%. Wow. These are alarming numbers.
Yeah,
37% regularly skip meals to try to lose weight. 27% would be extremely upset if they gained just 5 pounds. 26% cut out entire food groups. 16% have dieted on 1,000 calories a day or fewer. 12% often eat when they're not hungry. 49% sometimes do.
Hmm.
Okay. More than 31%, this is probably one of the worst statistics, more than 31% of women in the survey reported that in an attempt to lose weight, they had induced vomiting or had taken laxatives, diuretics, or diet pills at some point in their life. Among those women, more than 50% engaged in purging activities at least a few times a week.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. That's society pressure, and that's
awful. That is so unhealthy.
Wow. Isn't that amazing?
I also...
you must be right. Lines. The demographic must be a smaller...
I think it's younger.
You hear about purging activities among college-age girls, mm-hmm. college students. I don't know how prevalent that is.
As you get older.
Yeah.
I also heard that 90% of people underestimate the calories that they eat. So when they talk about people eating under... Yeah, because they were talking about when people go out to eat, you're totally wrong about what those calories are.
That I'm totally sure. I am totally sure
totally,
of.
Totally, totally wrong. It's always way more than what you think you're getting.
Absolutely.
Like even before you get... If you have a drink and an appetizer, that sometimes can be 3,000 calories depending on what it is.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody's like, oh no, I had just, you know, a little bit of food.
And a typical restaurant gives you three portions. It's really it's supposed to be they're one portion, but it's actually three real portions.
Right. But now with food prices going up, did you hear restaurants are cutting back on their portion size?
Thank God. That's healthy.
But they're in order to keep prices and not raise prices, they're cutting down on size.
I think that's a good thing for us all. We don't need to be eating, you know, a pound of fries.
Yeah, exactly.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, because that's why 75% of people are overweight.
And I like anybody else. I go to a restaurant and I'll eat what's on my plate if it's good.
Yeah.
But if it's a smaller portion, I'll be just as happy. I know it. But if I don't have the ability, as most people
right,
don't.
Right, you'll stop when it's done.
Right, I'll stop when it's done.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I really would appreciate smaller portions. I know people would scream like, "Oh, I'm not getting the value that I used to get." And it's not about value. If you want value, you wouldn't go out to dinner.
Right.
You could have better value if you buy stuff and cook
yourself.
It yourself. So it's not really value that you're going out for. You're going out there for an experience and for convenience and for social opportunities.
Right.
You're going out for different reasons.
Correct. Yeah.
So
interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, did you hear about the guy who's suing JetBlue?
No, I didn't.
Oh, this is so sad. But he was actually, he's starting to make the media rounds now. He was asked by the pilot on a 5.5-hour flight from San Diego to New York to sit in the toilet, to give up his seat and go sit in the toilet.
Oh, I heard about this.
Is that unbelievable?
I can't believe it's true.
Yeah, isn't that
unreal? And he even said that
he
would open the door and the flight attendants would ridicule him and stuff. And like, ooh, look at you sitting in the toilet. I mean...
Well, he said that he was asked to give up his seat for a flight attendant who found the jump seat too uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And he was
I don't buy it.
He was the last person on the flight and he was flying on a buddy pass. And then she didn't want to sit in the jump seat anymore. He wasn't allowed to sit in the jump seat because he wasn't an airline employee.
Right.
So,
well, not only do you have to be an airline employee, but you also have to be jump seat qualified.
Okay.
So you have to go through some
training.
Yeah.
Right. So the pilot told him to go hang out in the bathroom.
Yeah, so even I don't when buy it.
It seems
because there's no seatbelt. You cannot do it.
And that's totally a violation.
No pilot would do that.
Well, he is suing for, this is the part that gets me, he's suing for $2 million.
Oh, of course.
Now, come on. Okay, yeah, he was humiliated. And if his story is true, he should get something because that was really bad. Okay,
right.
That was just humiliating and it was bad and, you know.
Well, the airline should get punitive damage.
He should get something, but I mean, $2 million, no wonder airlines are bankrupt. I mean, we all need to keep the airlines going because don't we all want to go places?
Yeah, right.
And, you know, if just this superfluous lawsuit, I mean, you're right. His story sounds suspicious and...
Very suspicious.
And do you think he should be suing for $2 million? Was that really... Now he's afraid to fly again. That's his claim emotional damage. Oh, yeah, my.
Well, that's just showing his weakness, not anything to do with the event.
Gosh.
I mean, where's personal responsibility and all this stuff?
True.
Well, I am very disappointed in Hillary Clinton.
Oh, why?
I could not believe... Okay, here's the deal. Maybe you disagree with me on this.
You're not her blue-collar kind of guy.
I just, I have a lot of respect for all three candidates that are up. And it looks like at this point, it's Wednesday, the 15th, I guess. It looks like it's going to be Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. The conventional wisdom is going to be Barack. In fact, did you just see today that John Edwards finally made an endorsement, and that was him.
So maybe his 19 delegates will go to Obama, in which case he's getting really close to the number.
Yeah, and there's a slow trickle of the superdelegates going his way. So it looks like it's going to go that way.
It looks like it's going to be him, right?
But I'll tell you what.
Which, by the way, I was totally wrong on my predictions when we did them a couple months ago.
What was your prediction again?
It was Romney and Clinton.
Oh, okay.
Because Romney was very much ahead at that time.
And so. He's a good-looking man.
And he's a good-looking man who's run a state.
He could still be VP, you know.
Oh, I think they hate each other, though.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
But here's the deal, and I'm glad Hillary's not getting a nomination for things like this. This whole gas tax vacation thing. I just couldn't believe that both McCain and Clinton said, yes, we're going to do this. It makes sense. Lower your gas prices. When all the economists basically said what would happen is, okay, so you take away this tax, so you wouldn't get paid, you wouldn't get the things that tax was going to.
Which was infrastructure,
which you don't really want to give up on.
Right.
But the point is, maybe if it's good for relief and get people to consume fuel, there might be a trade-off there, understand. But all the top economists said, that won't happen. It's a supply and demand situation. So what'll happen is, you take the 18 cents tax away, and the price at the pump is still going to be the same. So all the money is just going to go to the oil companies because it levels out. Because
but they were going to also have to pay the windfall tax.
Well, that's what Hillary's little thing. Jim McCain wasn't even saying that.
Okay.
But that's what Hillary's was saying. But there is no windfall tax
yet
in there.
Right. Right. There isn't one yet.
So it's
what are the chances it would pass?
Right. Zero.
Zero. Okay.
Especially with Bush up there.
Right. He would veto it.
The point is,
it was flawed.
It was all a political endeavor. And, you know, Barack just says, this is all political. It doesn't make any sense. The economists are behind me. And did you hear what she said?
Well, he tried it, though, too. Illinois had tried
it. He did try it in Illinois once, and that's realized.
And he did vote for it at one point, and they tried it, and then they repealed it because it didn't work.
So
he said, I learned from my mistakes, and that's why I don't support it.
Right. Yeah. And don't you love that transparency, though? But this, okay, so she was on this week with George Stephanopoulos.
Uh-huh.
And basically, he was challenging her on it. He said, you know, all the leading economists say that this doesn't provide any kind of relief for the taxpayer.
Obama was on Meet the Press that same week. So, yeah, they were talking about it at the same time. Mm-hmm.
But she said the outrageous comment of, let me see here.
Oh, she didn't care about the economists.
I'm not going to put my lot in with economists.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, oh my God, George Bush all over again. I'm not going to put my lot in with scientists. I could not believe it. And this comes from a guy that I was supporting Barack over Hillary, as you know. But I always thought highly of Hillary. This is just... I think reasons why she shouldn't be nominated. She's going to pull this kind of crap. We need somebody who's just going to talk to us straight and not try to pull all the political stuff.
Yeah.
I was very disappointed. I thought she'd be better than that.
But remember, her husband did listen to Alan Greenspan for many years, for all 8 years.
Yeah.
Greenspan ran the Fed.
Well,
So you
know, your husband was a different animal, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, you know, one criticism I've heard of Obama that doesn't get a lot of press is he doesn't really work. He hasn't done anything in the Senate for quite some time. He doesn't go to the Senate, which I thought was pretty common, though, when everybody was running for president.
Right.
They didn't really go to the Senate. But he hasn't really, which was the question Romney asked, name anything he's done that's been substantial.
Right.
You know, when can you really name anything? Can you name one bill? Can you name one accomplishment that, you know, he hasn't put his name really on anything? He abstains from a lot of things. So it is kind of the... That is one of the naysaying things I have heard about him that doesn't get reviewed as frequently as, say, the, you know.
Yeah, you're right. It's come up a few times. And clearly, he's only been there for 2 years, and most of those years he's been campaigning. So,
right,
yeah,
and
he hasn't done that much on the committees. And
even
and so
when
forth.
He was in Illinois, he not abstained. What was the word when you don't want to, you're present, but you don't vote? I think you say present, but you don't say yes or no.
Yeah.
You just say I'm here,
yeah.
Which he did that a lot, far more than anybody else, which is not so good.
No, but if you so think good. You're going to go into higher office, which is really this election year is unique. We had all the three leading candidates were all senators.
Yes.
It's really unusual because senators don't normally get to
this level
because of all the votes.
Right, because they don't lead anything per se. They have to work together and it's all committee led. And
right, and then it's so easy to say, well, you voted for this. So
right.
You obviously have a reason.
Right.
When actually the reason I may have voted for this is because it's so nuanced. There are all these deals. There is this fivefold deal
that it's
too complicated to explain to you in the 30-second soundbite.
Right.
So it's going to make me look like an idiot, like I hate... Children.
That's right. I hate children because I didn't.
There's your soundbite.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't vote for the bill, so I hate children. Yeah, that's always a popular one.
so it is hard for senators to sort of get past that, and maybe that's what Barack was thinking. So yeah, that's probably a legitimate knock. You know, does it make him less qualified to be president? I don't know.
I think that we're going to hear that more though when they get down to the two of them.
Well, it's really going to be interesting, isn't it? You got this old timer with a lot of relevant experience,
right?
And this young guy
with not a whole lot of experience,
but just seems to have a lot of smart insight and really an intelligent guy. And McCain's smart too,
but
he needs to get smarter on the economy.
But what's frightening
and the Iraqi war,
is that
I think.
They're essentially tied right now in the polls. I mean, if it was going up against the two of them, they're tied, even though McCain is so closely associated with Bush and his policies, yet 70% of the people don't want the war. Everybody says the economy sucks. And yet, why is McCain have such a strong lead?
I do think it's too early, though.
That's true. Maybe as things shake out, the Democrats will unite and take one side.
Yeah, I don't know, though.
That is so alarming.
A little bit alarming.
It's like, how can that be? This is supposed to be a slam dunk year for Democrats.
This is a president that has a 31% approval rate.
Yeah, and lowest this guy, in history. Lowest in modern history. And this guy
is agreeing with him, and he's getting half the vote. I don't get it.
I'm not following where those polls are from.
I know.
Hey, one more thing about the economy.
Yes.
Guess what? The slump in jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard that the slump is really associated with men? It's a guy slump, not a woman slump.
Really?
Yeah, 700,000 men have lost jobs between November and April, whereas women, 300,000 women have gained jobs. It's all about the type of industry.
Huh.
Yeah, so American men are in recession, but American women are not. That's the bottom line of this great little article in Business Week. What's going on? Simply put, men have the misfortune of being concentrated in manufacturing and construction, which are the two worst performing sectors right now.
Got it.
And women are still in growing sectors like education and healthcare. So they're getting more jobs, but their pay is stagnant. And what's worse is that if you share household bills and you have, you know, a female economy can't support the male economy all that long.
Right.
So it's not so great in the long run, but it is kind of interesting right now that women are graduating from college at higher rates than men. In this new economy, female traits like sensitivity, intuition, and willingness to collaborate are helping women, whereas men have always done better in industries where there's hierarchies and positional power. So things are changing, and manufacturing is over 70% male, and construction is 88% male, while the education and health services are 77% female, and government is 57% female.
Huh.
Yeah, so, and men have a harder time getting back on track once they lose a job. It's hard to move from a $20 or $30 construction job to being a Walmart greeter. I thought
yeah.
that was a great line.
And the associated ego the that ego. Comes with that.
Right, right. Men do continue to earn more than women, though, on average. And 3/4 of people who earn over $100,000 are men in the United States. But women are feeling really stressed, even if sometimes they are the only breadwinner. They're saying now they're taking care of their parents, his parents. They're buying groceries. They're taking kids to the doctor. They're feeling very tired.
Really?
It's a really hard challenge for them. But there was this corollary article, too, about there are 10 careers where women definitely out-earn men.
Oh.
And some of them I hadn't even heard of, and I'm not quite sure what they are, but one of the most prominent is a sales engineer, where women can earn almost $90,000 while men earn $62,000.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that amazing? The average man would rather be sold by a woman than a man.
Well, and that's, I know.
And women outpace men verbally, so they're very good with details and following up. So a sales engineer, so I guess that's somebody who sells engineering services.
Well, I think of a sales engineer as actually an engineering background, so they're a little, they can be a little more technical
that.
Than
right.
most, and they're
right.
selling technical
they're selling
stuff.
Technical stuff, yeah, yeah. There you go. And then here's one that I would believe, mechanics and automotive service techs.
Yeah.
Mine is a woman, the one I go to, and she's actually really good most
yeah.
of the time.
Let's yeah.
take Saturday out of the equation, but most of the time. And it says that traditionally when females break a gender role, it's because they're really good and they're really motivated. So they have to be better.
Right.
So there you go.
Wow.
Yeah, financial analysts too. Women earn $70,000 and men earn $58,000. So it requires technical skill, the ability to communicate and pay attention to detail. Oh, interesting, interesting. But this was also interesting. People, just in general, people who work 44 hours a week make twice as much as those who work 34 hours a week. So it's 33% more pay for more work for 100% more pay. So it makes
really?
It cost efficient to hire out cleaning, errands, etc. So that was one of the differences between men and women's pay scale. They're saying that men work more hours because women are typically raising the kids.
Oh.
So, but if you work 44 hours a week, you're going to make 33% more, 100% more pay for only 33% more work.
Huh.
I thought that was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. So some of the other fields are library assistants, baggage porters, aerospace engineers, human resource assistants, and advertising and promotion managers. Those are where women out-earn men.
That's amazing. I wonder, I don't understand, except as you said, that's if you're a woman in those areas that you have to be maybe extra good because you've
been... Typically, ability to communicate and pay attention to details, you know?
Yeah.
So, go figure.
Wow. But like an aerospace engineer versus a mechanical engineer, I don't really see what the big difference is, you know?
True.
Well, I know you don't eat fish, but I have a public service announcement to make to our listeners that do eat fish.
Okay.
There's a fascinating article in Salon magazine, salon.com, an interview with a fellow named Taras Gresko, who wrote a book called Bottom Feeder, How to Eat Ethically in a World of Vanishing Seafood.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And it's got all kinds of tips on what to eat and what not to eat, both for our, your own personal health,
right.
but also to sort of save the food chain
right.
and save our oceans. He paints kind of a grim portrait, oceanic dead zones, that because of pollution and overfishing can no longer support organic life, salmon farms polluted by pesticides and disease, ruthless bottom trawlers with nets that can destroy entire ecosystems. So let me go into just some of his sort of recommendations.
You know where you get these too? Like if you go to an aquarium, like the Monterey Bay Aquarium,
Yeah. They
give you a little cards to say, eat this fish.
Oh,
this
really?
This is on the good list, and don't eat this fish. It's on the bad list.
Okay.
Because it will harm the environment, or the fish is very much endangered.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And there are some subtleties too, as we'll get into. So in North America, we do consume a lot of fish, but we eat the bad fish, is what he's saying. Eating these fish disrupts the food chains and creates a situation where there's all these strange trophic cascades. All of a sudden, there are more jellyfish in the ocean, more bottom feeders. We're changing the very nature of the oceans. So he's saying, stay away from the fish at the top end of the oceanic food chains right now. Big fish like tuna, swordfish, shark. These are traditionally middle of the plate proteins in the world's best restaurants. And they're actually a lot of the more risky ones in terms of having things like mercury. And in the case of salmon, persistent organic pollutants.
Hmm.
If you really want to do some good for the ocean, start exploring the pelagic fish. Whiting, for example, the schooling fish like sardines and anchovies, things that we don't even really cook right now, but are actually very popular in other countries.
Oh, wow.
And I've read about that as far as mercury goes, and I've been eating sardines every day.
Whoa.
I love them. And I stay away from the other fish, but I didn't know salmon was so bad. So the other things he recommends is oysters and pollock. Pollock's got a terrible name, but that's the stuff that goes into actually McDonald's fillet of fish. It's very abundant and cheap, and it's good.
Huh.
There's trout, which isn't a bad fish. Sable fish and Arctic char are also very abundant. Herring is also, it's a small one of those small fish, and it's very good, and I love herring.
Mm, yeah.
I need to eat more. I need to get more herring in my life. Avoid the big fish, as we said, which also includes the Chilean sea bass,
Yep. Tuna,
with the exception of skipjack, which is pretty abundant. And avoid farmed carnivorous species like the plague, like shrimp, salmon, and bluefish tuna. Just don't eat them. Avoid imported farmed seafood because domestic standards are better. Now, it goes into a little more detail about the salmon farms.
And the imported one. Yeah, is this like where Walmart advertises salmon for $4.96
yes,
a pound?
Don't buy that
stuff.
Don't
buy it because you're killing the waters off of, Peru, where they're farming it?
Yes, and you're killing yourself.
Yeah.
So salmons from these farms tend to be full of persistent organic pollutants, which are not only highly carcinogenic, salmon farmers grind up smaller fish, like those anchovy sardines and anchoveta, to make the pellets, all of which should be going to feed humans, not making deluxe fish, especially in the context of food riots. He's making a little social statement here.
Uh-huh.
And salmon farms have been proven to spread disease and parasites like sea lice to wild fish populations. So they're really, really bad, and you're doing a disservice by buying this stuff. Now, sometimes it's hard. Like, if you go into a restaurant, how do you know?
Right,
you know?
Right.
He said some farmed fishes aren't so bad. Trout is actually pretty good. Arctic char, they do a good job of, which is raised inland. There's no risk of spreading parasites to wild fish. Tilapia and carp. I never heard of eating carp.
Yeah,
tilapia,
wow.
Of course. Which are
thought carp was that ugly one that nobody wanted to eat.
Well, yeah, I know. Which are herbivorous. So they eat vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, oysters and mussels, which actually help clean the oceans of their excess plankton. So he said you can go ahead and eat those. There is a way you can safely eat salmon. He said, first of all, canned salmon, which, I know you don't eat that, but canned salmon is really not that good. But he said it is really very good, except make sure that the can says Alaskan on it. If it says Atlantic, do not buy it. It's definitely farmed.
Hmm.
So that's very good to know. He says there is a small little area called organic farm salmon, and if you find that, buy it. It's probably pretty good. He said he can't guarantee it, but it's probably raised with a lot higher standards.
It's probably really expensive.
I'm sure it is. Well, he makes a comment about this, which I thought was really interesting. Okay, first of all, I guess I'll get down to it here. He says shrimp, basically, pretty much, if you get your shrimp from Red Lobster or any place that's cheap, it's going to be
all you can eat.
It's going to be pesticide infested from some pond in a developing world someplace.
But it's going to be fried in batter, so don't they kill the pesticides when they fry it?
I don't think so. It's guaranteed you're contributing to the misery of all human beings by eating that stuff. Now, it said buying things like organic farmed salmon gets expensive. How can you do this in the cost of rising? The face of rising cost of food? He said start with the canned fish, sardines, mackerels, herring. They're really cheap. And they should be. And there's hardly any contamination or mercury in those fish. So stay away from canned tuna, except for the skipjack.
Huh.
Now, this is what his interesting social statement is. He said, shrimp and salmon in particular are two of the most popular seafoods in North America.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, These should be luxury foods. When I was a kid, my mom was paying $15 to $20 a pound for salmon, and it tasted fantastic.
Mm.
Now it's one of the choices in in-flight meals. It's rubbery and disgusting. And you know this is, well, you don't eat it, but right. You know this is so true. The salmon quality is crappy. You've got to have some respect for the fishermen, too. That's an amazing trade. They really work hard, and they actually care about the resources. They want to fish next season, and maybe their kids will go into fishing, too. There's a real connection to the resource. So, you know, he's kind of promoting local fishermen and so forth. Blah, blah, blah. I'm reading down this article.
Where was this article? Because it sounds
interesting. Salon.com. Okay, there he cites there's two websites. One is a Canadian website. It's called seachoice.org. And in America, there's the Monterey Bay Seafood Watch.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So you can type in a name of the species down to albacore tuna, and it'll give you a check mark or a red X, and you'll know to avoid it. And actually, Gretchen, in Europe right now, there's good labeling. Now, there's some specialty outfits, like you can go to Marks and Spencer's and the Marine Stewardship Council, where they sell fish with blue and white labeling on it that says this is safe to eat or not. And wow. I don't know why they would sell something that's not safe to eat. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, true.
It's cheaper. So the end, that's about it. But the last part of this interview, he goes, it sounds very depressing out there. And he goes, you know what, though? There's a lot of positive things as well. And actually, he cited Arnold Schwarzenegger. And California is doing a lot of nifty things off his coasts to ensure marine zones of no fishing zones. And that really helps. And he said there's a growing consciousness around the world. He's actually bullish and optimistic. And one thing about the food chain, it's tough right now in the oceans.
Mm.
But he said it recovers fast.
Yeah. Well, good.
So,
good.
Yeah. Well, that's my public service announcement. If you eat fish, you know, eat the good stuff. Eat the small stuff.
Mm-hmm. You probably haven't given this much thought, but when it comes time to think about it, are you thinking you'd like to be buried or cremated?
I don't care.
You don't care? Really?
Nope.
Well, what if you had a third option?
I'd take it. I don't know.
let me tell you about the third option, because this is what the groundbreaking stuff is. There's not too much news that comes out of the funeral industry, but there's some news.
I imagine that trade journal has got to be really dull.
Can you imagine? Well, there's some game-changing technology out there, babe. And I thought you might want to know about it, because it's really pretty interesting
when
you think about it. Yeah, it's called alkaline hydrolysis. It sounds sexy, doesn't it?
I want that.
Right. Well, since man first walked on the planet, humans have either buried or burned their dead. Now there's a new option. What if you could dissolve them in lye and flush them down the drain?
Ooh, sounds nice.
Right. The body becomes a brown syrup, like thick like motor oil.
Really?
And you can pour it down the drain. Takes about 4 hours. You put it in 92 gallons of water and 4 gallons of this certain lye. You heat it up to 338 degrees. And 3 hours later, you got yourself some liquidy, syrupy stuff.
That you could put on pancakes?
I don't think you'd want to put it on pancakes. Hey, Grandma, you're tasting good this morning.
I wouldn't want to put it down my drains, though, either. It doesn't sound
there you go.
It'd be good for the drains.
True.
But
it's happening right now in two places. It was actually developed for disposing of...
What's the advantage of it? Is it a cheaper way of disposal? Is that what they're getting to?
Well, not yet, but it was developed to get rid of dead animals. And it's currently being used on cadavers in research. Like the Mayo Clinic uses it right now to get rid of their cadavers.
Got it.
And there's a place in Manchester, New Hampshire... funeral director is pushing to offer it, but some people are just finding it absolutely revolting. It doesn't take up as much space in cemeteries as burial, and the process could ease concerns about crematorium emissions. So it's a little greener, perhaps, than crematoriums.
Okay.
But at some point, it sounds like it could get cheaper, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It certainly sounds like, God, if you just need water and some lye.
Yeah, and mix it together.
Yeah, and then it leaves a little bit of ash, so you still have some ashes if you really wanted that, if that was important. You get a dry bone residue similar to cremated remains.
Okay.
But there you go. There's the chamber where they do it.
Oh, oh wow. That's very interesting.
So we may have three choices by the time it comes around for us to make a decision, you know?
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of unusual.
It's very interesting.
Because it is not a whole lot of groundbreaking stuff happening in this business.
No, there's not.
Yeah.
All right, so I got a couple things here.
Mm-hmm.
I did actually pulled out the calculator and did some math. I was interested. I heard them talking about on the sports.
Did you graph something?
No, I didn't graph it though.
Oh, okay.
On the sports show, they were talking about public libraries. Now, do you use a public library?
No, I do not.
So I don't either. And I said, I wonder how much I am paying for the public libraries. So I went to the city of Dallas, did the budget stuff, looked at how much they paid, and here's what I found out. So for the fiscal year of 2003-2004, the budget for the city of Dallas was about $22 million. And they employ about 400 full-time employees.
For the whole city or just for the library
I'm
part?
Sorry. You're
I was
going
to say, I think it's got to be the library part.
Sorry, the library part. Duh.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, the whole city is $811 million.
Okay.
So it's about 2.75% of the total budget.
Okay.
So they figure the population of Dallas is about 2.3 million, so the budget per person is $9.50 per year. Now, that's a misleading figure, as I'll get into. So that's not a proper calculation. So 42% of our budget comes from property tax, which is interesting, from the city budget. And this is just for interest. 22% comes from sales tax. 12% comes from franchises revenues. Those are typically from the utilities. The utilities have to pay the city to operate in them.
Okay.
And 12% from charge services. So things like moving your big items, waste and things like that. Things that they would charge for, pools, in the summer, things like that. And that's about 88% of the total, those four categories. Well, other 12% are, you know, a lot of different little things. But so 42% from property tax. So I paid almost $6,000 in property taxes last year. And so I did the backwards calculations. And actually, I did this calculation two different ways and got the same number. So I figured I must be right. I am a PMP now, after all.
You pimp.
So I'm paying $372 for the library. So now that's greatly opposed as to the, if you just do the raw division of the budget by
person. Wait, because you're a homeowner.
Exactly.
But what if you weren't a homeower?
Well, if I wasn't a homeowner, then...
Then you'd be paying $9.
Then I would, that's probably a closer figure. You'd have to exclude the 42% that comes from property tax because you figure paying some sales tax. And
right.
So you'd have to do a different calculation.
Right.
But I'm paying $373, and you know, I don't know what that means to me. I was trying to figure out, okay, I don't use it, so clearly I could say, well, I don't use the library.
Well, you don't use the schools either, and that's
precisely
the part that really gets me, is that I don't use the schools. I never will. I won't.
You should.
And, you know.
You could use some schooling.
But, you know, I'm paying for the good of all children
right,
everywhere.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I'm paying.
But I don't get a break. And I see my property tax goes to pay schools.
I'm paying $370, which is about the same I pay for my health cost. And I use my gym all the time. I don't use the library at all. And I'm glad to pay that amount of money if it makes us a better community. If it, you know, helps educate our people,
right,
kids and all that. I just don't know if it does. You know, I don't know how many people go to the library, use the services.
Yeah, I wonder what the demographics of the library are.
I don't know. I know the Central Maine Library is a lot of homeless kind of hang out around there. I think they try to clean it up and stuff. But there's a lot of neighborhood ones.
Neighborhood,
like, I got one right here in White Rock, and I've actually walked in a couple of times, and the demographic is the demographic of the neighborhood. It's, you know, good people. Anyways,
so
I
maybe
don't know.
For our $370-some, we should check it out, see what we get.
Well, I think there's definitely, we should probably check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out, get it. And apparently you can renew books online.
Wow,
you can do a bunch of stuff online.
Cool.
So, you know.
I think older folks use it more.
I think they do. And my parents still use theirs. And I'm sure if I read a lot, I'd use it. But I don't really find that I have a lot of time to read.
But I do read a lot, but I buy the books. Or actually, my friends and I share them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we pass them all around.
Pretty common, yeah.
But it would never dawn on me to go to the library to borrow a book.
Or to see videos. They've got, you know, video collections and all that. I mean, my parents will always get the, you know, the HBO shows because they don't have HBO. They'll get them a season behind.
Right.
They'll either get them at their Blockbuster or the library.
The library.
A lot of them at the library.
Yeah. Now, should our library dollars be going to buy
Sex in the City?
I don't know. Or I was going to say The Sopranos. There's not a lot of redeeming value in that. Yet if my library is purchasing 50 copies of that because that's the most popular thing, I mean, well, where's the redeeming value of that? You know, it's entertainment,
right,
not education. So
are libraries all about education, or can it be about entertainment?
That's an interesting one.
Good question, really. I don't know.
But did you hear, too, that this year there's, I think, what is it, a Dallas faces a $50 million shortfall in taxes? So we're looking at a tax increase.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Really big tax shortfall.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
It sucks.
It does. Well, yeah, okay. I wonder if it's those libraries.
Okay. I know. That's eating up all those funds. Okay, so a woman at my company got laid off recently. And about 2 weeks after she was gone, I noticed that she had some, you know, frozen food thing in the freezer with her name on it. And I thought, well, she's not coming back. I'm going to eat it. Was I right or wrong? I had a little ethical dilemma, but then, you know, then I thought, what the hell? It was yummy.
You can't send it to her.
No.
No.
And it was 2 weeks, so I figured if she was going to come back, you know, and get a box full of stuff, she would have.
Right.
So was I okay?
I sort of think you were.
Yay.
Why? What do other people think?
I don't know. I didn't ask. I didn't fess up. I figured I was doing a service and cleaning up the freezer.
And you're sure it was hers and it wasn't somebody else with the same first name?
No, I'm sure it was hers. Because she was one of the... I cook a lot of food at work and she always did too.
Oh, okay.
So, okay. That doesn't mean leading indicator being laid off.
The food cookers, ooh. Get it.
All right, one other question. Men and dancing and clubbing.
Yeah.
You know, I've got sort of increasingly
You going to dress up in a costume and go dance?
It seems like I keep running across people that enjoy clubbing.
Okay.
And you know, I think I kind of get it for women. You know, you go to a club and you get attention.
Yeah.
And women, let's face it, women like to dance more than men.
Yeah.
So I get it, right. Why they go. They try to drag me, and I'm like, you know, I'll go to be nice for a little bit, but I don't get into the clubbing environment. First of all, I never get attention. Second of all, I don't like to dance. And I realize as a guy, you probably have to have that club speak to kind of, you know, approach women and stuff. And it's just not me. I do well in other environments, but I don't really know the club scene that well. And I just don't feel comfortable there. It's just not my thing. But it got me thinking. It's like, I know some guys like to dance out there, but mm-hmm. I think a lot of guys are like me that don't like to dance.
Right.
But isn't dancing just a little gay? I mean, isn't it just a little gay?
Well, have you been watching Dancing with the Stars at all?
No, I don't.
Oh.
All right, maybe I'm wrong. I'm just posing the question.
It's actually a really good exercise.
I'm sure it is.
You know, if you really take lessons and...
Yeah.
And you've taken lessons before.
Yeah, I've taken tango.
Tango lessons, tango. Right?
I take a little bit of salsa, too. Yeah, but I feel like that's less gay. Like, maybe I'm thinking of like, ooh, like some guy that, ooh, I want to go clubbing and dancing all night. Ooh,
yeah.
You know, shake my booty.
Right.
But that seems very gay to me. But, you know, going and dancing tango, something that takes a long time to learn and it's intricate, somehow doesn't seem gay. Maybe I'm just totally wrong. Maybe our listeners will correct me.
And it's a different crowd, too.
Yeah.
Or even swing dancing, too. That's a whole different crowd.
Yeah.
People who swing dance, they go because they love the dance and they love the music.
Yeah.
And they don't go to date or pick up other people.
Right.
So there's certain types of dances where it's very much just into the dance and perfecting the technique. But I think what you're talking about is pickup joints, you know,
most clubs.
But dancing to popular music,
right.
Which is kind of free form and a little, to your point, maybe a little gay.
Yeah. But, you know, I have these women say, well, why don't you like clubs? And I'm like, there's nothing for me there. I don't get attention like you guys get. And I don't like to dance. So what is there for me? I'd much rather go see a jazz band or a rock band or, you know, something.
But you would get attention if you wore a costume. So keep that in mind.
I mean, positive attention. Well, I have some more stuff, but I think it's time for us to say...
Adios.
Say goodbye. So glad. So I'm going to start a new song to say... I'm so glad we had this time together.
Oh, that's Carol Burnett, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what? I didn't mean to. I just turned on the TV once at random.
Uh-huh.
And there was this Carol Burnett retrospective.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
Good.
And it was neat seeing some of the old shows. And she did her variety show for 10 years. They kept fighting for the show. Finally, Carol got out. The show was doing great. She just wanted to get out. But they wanted to keep the show up because they knew it was going to be the last of its kind.
Oh,
sort of that variety kind.
Hmm.
And
that's interesting.
It was really nice. They had interviews with Harvey Korman.
Vicki Lawrence.
And yeah. Tim Conway.
And she's touring during her mother character.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Which, that was a kind of crappy show, but yeah. I thought Mama's Family. Like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it was, that was good. So, and that the final show, and she sang I'm so glad we had this. It was nice. It was very sweet. Wow. I have to say. Yeah. So.
Well, goodbye then, everybody.
Bye. Right. I'm glad we had this time together.